You know, when you watch a skyscraper being built, for the longest time, it just looks like a giant, messy science experiment.
Oh, totally. Just scaffolding everywhere.
Right, scaffolding everywhere, sparks flying, cranes moving dirt around. It's loud, it's chaotic, and you can't really imagine anyone actually living in it. But then, almost overnight, the scaffolding comes down, the concrete foundation sets, and suddenly it's not an experiment anymore.
Yeah, it's the structure that holds everything up. It becomes the new reality. You
Exactly.
stop looking at how it's being built and you just, start walking through the front door.
Well, today is Wednesday, April 15th, 2026. And for you, the listener, the scaffolding around artificial intelligence is officially coming down.
It really is.
It is no longer this experimental chat tool that we just play with on the side. It has become the load-bearing structural foundation of our workforce, our cybersecurity, and honestly, the way we physically browse the internet.
Yeah, it's everywhere now.
And looking at the stack of freshly curated tech news sitting in front of us today, our mission for this deep dive is to explore this transition because it is happening with a velocity that is, I mean, it's incredibly jarring.
Jarring is definitely the right word, because when you pour a new foundation, you inherently have to displace whatever was sitting there before.
Right.
And right now, we are seeing the immediate tangible consequences of what happens when massive corporations decide that, well, that human labor is simply too slow and too expensive to be part of that new foundation.
Okay, let's unpack this because the most unavoidable consequence of this shift is happening over at Snap Inc.
The parent company of Snapchat.
Right, Snapchat. Just today, they announced a massive sweeping restructuring. They are laying off 1,000 full-time employees.
Which is just a staggering number. That's 16% of their entire global workforce.
Wow, 16%.
Yeah. And they aren't just trimming the edges here either. They are completely closing down 300 open positions.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a fundamental operational pivot for the whole company.
And the stated goal here is to save over $500 million annually.
Just to finally reach net income profitability.
Right. But here is the detail in the announcement that really grabbed me. CEO Evan Spiegel didn't just give the usual, boilerplate corporate speak.
The usual PR spin.
Exactly. He didn't blame macroeconomic headwinds or shifting consumer trends or whatever. He explicitly cited rapid advancements in AI for allowing the company to operate with smaller, more efficient teams.
It's a profoundly stark shift in executive messaging. I mean, for the last couple of years, companies have sort of tiptoed around this.
Right, calling it a co-pilot and all that.
Exactly. They would say AI is a co-pilot or just a tool to enhance employee productivity. But here, we are seeing the direct, unapologetic replacement of human labor to achieve corporate profitability. And it's spoken out loud in a public memo.
I have to push back here, though. I mean, is this really about AI efficiency? Or is AI just becoming an incredibly convenient PR scapegoat for, standard brutal corporate cost cutting?
That's a fair question.
It almost feels like a shield to me, like management saying, hey, don't blame our poor financial planning. Blame the algorithm. The technology made us do it.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is undeniably a bit of both. But you absolutely cannot ignore the underlying operational shift that makes that excuse viable in the first place.
Okay, how so?
Well, what Snap is doing here is essentially writing a blueprint for the entire social media industry. Think about how these platforms operated over the last decade.
They just hired everyone they could.
Right, they hired aggressively, building massive sprawling teams for content moderation, basic coding, QA testing, internal logistics. But the reality is, AI has genuinely automated massive chunks of those cognitive workflows now.
Right, so it's not like the Industrial Revolution where manual looms were replaced by power looms, which is the cliche everyone always
Oh,
uses.
for sure. It's totally different.
It's more like replacing an entire floor of highly trained paralegals who read documents all day with like a single highly advanced search bar. Snap isn't just speeding up the assembly line.
No, they are removing the need for the line entirely.
Exactly.
They are fundamentally reducing their cognitive overhead. But you are right to point out the PR angle, because the tension here is just fascinating. Look at how the market reacted to Spiegel's memo.
I saw that. The stock went up.
It did.
Snap's stock rose 2.5% in after-hours trading, like immediately after the announcement dropped.
The investors cheered. I mean, Wall Street sees $500 million in savings, a leaner operation, and they just applaud.
Yeah.
But there is a massive, dangerous tension between those cheering investors and the operational reality on the ground inside that company.
Because you can't just lose that many people without consequences.
Exactly. Snap claims they are now going to focus all these freed up resources entirely on AI-powered features and augmented reality. But you cannot simply amputate 16% of your staff and expect the remaining organism to function perfectly.
Because you lose the institutional memory.
That is exactly it.
Yes.
You risk crippling your company culture. You risk severe product quality drops because the people who actually understood the eccentricities of the code base, well, they're just gone.
Right.
And of course, you face intense public backlash for explicitly choosing machines over human livelihoods.
But Snap's entire assumption here relies on AI being this flawless, impenetrable engine of efficiency, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
They are assuming that by removing the human element, the company naturally becomes stronger. But the reality is, as these tech companies hand the operational keys over to AI and automated code, attackers aren't even bothering to attack the code anymore.
No, why would they?
Right. They are realizing that the humans left over, the executives, the managers, the everyday users, they are now the easiest targets.
It is the ultimate paradox of modern technology.
Yeah.
As our systems get mathematically smarter, our human psychology becomes the glaring vulnerability. And the numbers proving this are, frankly, terrifying.
They really are. We have the Q1 2026 Hacken Report right here, and it perfectly illustrates this shift.
Let's hear it.
So in just the first 3 months of this year, Web3 projects lost $482 million across 44 different incidents.
That's a huge amount of money.
It is. But the shocking detail is how that money was lost. Out of that total, $306 million, which is 63.5%, was lost strictly to phishing and social engineering.
Let's just put that in perspective for a second.
Go ahead.
The actual technical vulnerabilities in smart contracts only accounted for $98 million.
Which is what, about 20%?
Roughly, yeah. And pure infrastructure attacks were just $52 million, or barely 10%.
So wait, for an audience that follows the tech space, we know that Web3 and blockchain were supposed to be this unhackable, cryptographically secure utopia.
That was the pitch, right?
But instead, it's like installing a billion-dollar, state-of-the-art, impenetrable bank vault door, but leaving the front gate completely wide open.
Man.
So scammers can just walk up, hand the security guard a fake badge, and sweet-talk him into just giving them the vault combination.
That is exactly the dynamic we're seeing. Now, there is a silver lining in the Hacken Report that we really do have to acknowledge.
Okay, so what's that?
Total losses are actually down 76.6% compared to Q1 of 2025.
Oh, wow. That's a massive drop.
It is. Last year, we saw those massive systemic mega attacks. I mean, think about the $1.46 billion Bybit hack.
Right, I remember that.
But those days of finding a tiny flaw in the code and draining $1 billion in one fell swoop, those days seem to be fading.
Why is that, though? Are the smart contracts just getting too mathematically airtight for hackers to even bother with?
Precisely. Smart contracts are essentially self-executing code where the rules are baked in immutably.
Right.
And over the last year, the auditing tools for that code have become incredibly robust. Mm-hmm. And why does this matter to you, the listener? Because water always flows to the path of least resistance.
Makes sense.
As the technical security hardens, the hackers pivot entirely to human psychology.
Because in Web3, there is no centralized bank manager to call if you make a mistake.
None at all.
There's no fraud department to reverse the charge. The human being clicking approve is literally the final security layer.
And a human being is always going to be more susceptible to a perfectly timed, panic-inducing fake email from what looks like their boss than a heavily audited smart contract is to a brute force exploit.
Right. Humans panic. Code doesn't.
Exactly. What the Hacken Report shows is that hackers are now executing multiple mid-sized attacks, you know, 5 million here, 10 million there.
Which doesn't make international headlines.
Right. They fly completely under the media radar, but they are highly, highly successful because they target our anxiety, our greed, or just our basic trust.
So if human error and our psychological blind spots are driving nearly two-thirds of all cybersecurity failures right now, we clearly cannot rely on ourselves.
We really can't.
We need something that doesn't get tired, doesn't panic, and definitely doesn't fall for a phishing email.
Exactly.
And that brings us to what the tech titans are deploying right now. They are building highly specialized AI to act as an automated active defense mechanism against these exact threats.
Yeah, we are moving way beyond general purpose AI that just, you know, writes emails or generates images of cats.
Right.
We were talking about highly specialized surgical cyber guardians.
Look at what OpenAI just dropped today, April 15. they launched GPT 5.4 Cyber.
Which is a huge deal.
It is. This is a specialized model built purely for defensive cybersecurity. And the capabilities they are listing are intense. They're talking about binary reverse engineering, high-speed malware analysis, and preemptive vulnerability detection.
To really understand why this is such a massive leap, we have to look at how binary reverse engineering actually works in the field.
Okay, walk me through it.
When a company gets hit with a brand new piece of hostile malware, that malware is usually compiled, meaning it's a dense, unreadable block of machine logic.
Right, it looks like gibberish to a person.
Exactly. Historically, a human security expert would have to sit down and painstakingly peel back the layers of that logic to figure out what it's trying to steal and how it was built.
Which takes a long time, I assume.
It could take weeks. But GPT 5.4 Cyber can ingest that hostile logic and uncompile it, mapping out its entire attack strategy in a matter of seconds.
Seconds. Wow. Which is an incredible defensive advantage.
Oh, absolutely.
But how they are rolling this out is wild to me. OpenAI launched the Trusted Access for Cyber program, or TAC, and it has three tiers.
Right, the tier system.
Tier one gives basic access to literally thousands of security researchers. Tier two goes to hundreds of corporate security teams. And tier three is full, unrestricted access to the underlying model for a few hundred top-tier professionals.
Which stands in incredibly sharp contrast to what their rival, Anthropic, did just a few days ago.
Oh, right. Claude.
Yeah, Anthropic released their Claude Mythos preview, but they locked it down with incredibly strict security limits. They were terrified that if the model is too smart at understanding code, bad actors could manipulate it to write new, unstoppable zero-day viruses.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because I have to challenge OpenAI's strategy here.
Okay, let's hear it.
Anthropic locking their model down makes logical sense to me. But OpenAI is handing GPT 5.4 Cyber to thousands of tier one researchers. Yes, they are quote unquote verified, but thousands of people is a massive surface area.
Just a lot of people. Yeah.
Isn't OpenAI basically handing out highly advanced cyber weapons and just relying on the honor system, crossing their fingers that nobody goes rogue?
This raises an important question, and it is arguably the defining philosophical debate in the cybersecurity world today.
How so?
Well, you have Anthropic's philosophy, which is safety through strict restriction.
Right. Keep the weapons locked up.
Exactly. But OpenAI's philosophy is democratized defense. Their core argument is that the bad guys, you know, state-sponsored hackers, ransomware syndicates, they are already using rogue AI to attack us.
That's true. The genie is out of the bottle.
Right. So if you restrict the good guys from having equally powerful AI tools, the attackers win by default. By giving thousands of verified researchers access, OpenAI believes they are creating an overwhelming, decentralized force of active, pattern-recognizing guardians.
It's an arms race.
It really is.
The hackers use AI to find the human flaw, and the defenders use AI to patch the hole before the human even notices.
Exactly.
And this active guardian concept isn't just happening at the enterprise, nation-state level. It is trickling all the way down into our entertainment.
Oh, this is one of my favorite examples.
It's so cool. Just look at Valve, the company behind the massive video game Counter-Strike 2. In early April, a well-known data miner named Gabe Follower found hidden code buried in the CS2 updates.
People are always digging through those files.
Always. And the code pointed to something called SteamGPT and SteamGP Trender Farm.
Which is just a brilliant application of this technology. Mm-hmm. Now, Valve hasn't officially announced it yet, but the hidden code shows it integrating directly with Counter-Strike 2's Trust Score system.
So what does it actually do?
Well, it appears to be an internal AI tool designed to handle support tickets, yes, but crucially, to act as a behavioral anti-cheat system.
Wait, so explain how a behavioral anti-cheat differs from what games have been using for the last, like, 20 years.
Okay, so traditional anti-cheat software works exactly like a bouncer at a nightclub checking IDs against a blacklist.
Oh, yeah.
It scans the files on your computer, looking for known signatures of cheat software. If the cheat is brand new or custom built, the bouncer doesn't recognize the signature, and the cheater just walks right into the game.
Ah, I see. So the traditional method is entirely reactive. It has to know what it's looking for beforehand.
Exactly. It's playing catch-up.
Mm-hmm.
But behavioral AI, like what SteamGPT appears to be, doesn't care about the files on your computer.
What does it care about?
It watches how you play. It looks at the actual biomechanics of your gameplay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it spots suspicious player patterns like aiming speeds that are physically impossible for a human arm, or a player whose crosshair perfectly tracks enemies through solid walls without any line of sight.
That is wild.
It shifts the AI from being a passive file scanner to an active behavioral guardian watching over the entire ecosystem.
Okay, so let's track where we are, because we've covered a lot.
We definitely have.
We've seen AI stepping in as a brutal corporate cost cutter, replacing 16% of the jobs at Snap.
Yep.
We've seen it stepping up as a highly advanced cyber guardian, hunting advanced persistent threats for OpenAI and video game cheaters for Valve.
Right.
But I want to bring this right down to the listener's immediate, intimate, day-to-day digital life.
Yeah.
Because the sources we are looking at show that AI is no longer something you have to actively seek out.
No, not anymore.
It is becoming completely frictionless.
Frictionless is exactly the right concept. It is just disappearing into the background of our operating system.
Yesterday, April 14th, Google added a new, totally free feature to their Chrome browser on Mac, Windows, and Chrome OS. It's called Skills.
This is a really big deal for everyday users.
It is. Basically, you can save your most used Gemini AI prompts as a skill right in your browser toolbar and execute them on whatever web page you are currently looking at with a single click.
And the key here is the removal of friction. There is no opening a new tab. There is no highlighting, copying, and pasting text into a separate chat interface.
None of that. Say you are shopping online. You click your custom compare skill, and the AI instantly scans the page you are on and compares the price with competitors.
It's instant.
Or if you're reading a dense 40-page research paper, you click summarize, and it distills it right there in the sidebar, looking at a recipe. Click a skill to instantly convert the ingredients for four people or translate the whole page into simple Persian.
And it requires absolutely no paid Gemini Advanced subscription.
Right, it's free.
Google is completely bypassing Microsoft Copilot and ChatGPT here by offering full invisible browser integration.
And Google didn't stop with the browser, did they?
No, they did not. On the very same day, they launched Gemini Personal Intelligence in India, expanding the rollout from the U.S. and Japan.
Right, and this goes way beyond the browser. This connects Gemini directly into the absolute core of your digital identity.
Your whole life, basically.
Seriously. Your Gmail, your Google Photos, your YouTube watch history, and your search history, you don't have to organize anything anymore.
You just ask it.
Yeah, you can just ask your browser, find my flight reservation for next week, or summarize those cooking videos I watched on YouTube last night, or even just track that package I ordered.
What's fascinating here is the evolution of what the industry calls contextual AI.
Contextual AI, okay.
Right. For the last few years, AI was a destination. You had to actively decide, I am going to go to this specific website and type a prompt to talk to the AI.
Like going to the library to ask a librarian a question.
Exactly. But now, it is no longer a separate destination. It is an invisible contextual layer sitting directly over your entire digital life.
Yeah.
It already knows what email you are reading. It already knows what photo you are looking at. It knows what recipe you have open.
It really feels like moving from having to pick up the phone and dial a brilliant friend for advice every time you need help to having that friend just quietly sitting on your shoulder, constantly reading your screen, and ready to jump in the exact second you tap the desk.
That's a great analogy. It's an immense, unparalleled reduction in cognitive load. The convenience is objectively incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the trade-off for that convenience is total intimacy.
Right.
For that friend on your shoulder to be helpful, they have to see absolutely everything you do.
Mm.
And that is why Google had to emphasize the privacy controls so heavily in the India launch.
Because people are rightfully paranoid about a machine reading their personal emails. I mean, I am.
Exactly. We all are. So Google made it purely opt-in. You have to actively choose to turn it on. Users can disconnect the apps at any time. They can see exactly which specific email or photo the AI pulled the data from to answer their question. And they can delete their conversation history instantly.
Okay, so they're trying to build trust.
Google is acutely aware that to make people comfortable with an unprecedented level of digital intimacy, they have to over-index on transparency.
Because if the AI doesn't know everything about you, it can't function as that invisible, fictionless layer.
Exactly. It needs your data to be useful, but it needs your trust to get your data.
Wow. Okay, let's take a breath and look at the massive journey we've just been on today.
We covered a ton of ground.
We did. We started with Snap, deciding that human labor was too inefficient, replacing hundreds of workers with AI to achieve profitability.
Yep.
We saw that while human code is getting safer, humans themselves are the weakest link, losing hundreds of millions in Web3 to psychological phishing attacks.
Because human psychology doesn't change.
Right. Then we watched OpenAI and Valve deploy specialized behavioral AI models to act as our active, unhackable cyber guardians. And finally, we saw Google weaving AI completely invisibly into the fabric of our daily web browsing with one-click skills and personal intelligence.
It's everywhere.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener?
Well, it means we have arrived at a tipping point of total reliance. And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, connecting all these pieces together.
Okay, let's hear it.
We saw in the Hacken report that social engineering and phishing are the biggest threats to our security because our human psychology is vulnerable.
Right, the human is the weak link.
Exactly. But if AI is now becoming our primary cybersecurity shield, and if it is the invisible frictionless filter through which we read, summarize, and understand the internet on our browsers, what happens to our own critical thinking?
Oh, wow. If Chrome summarizes the email for us, we stop actually reading the email.
Precisely. When your browser auto-prompts your questions and then instantly summarizes the answers for you, your cognitive muscles atrophy.
That's a scary thought.
And if we lose that critical thinking, don't we become even more susceptible to the exact social engineering attacks we just talked about?
Oh, man.
Who is actually doing the thinking, you or the machine?
It brings us right back to that skyscraper being built. The scaffolding is gone. The concrete foundation has set. The building is open for business.
It sure is.
But now that we are living inside it, surrounded by an AI workforce, AI guardians, and AI reading assistants, we have to wonder if we even remember how to pour the concrete ourselves.
That's the real question.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the digital world around you. Keep looking closely at the foundation under your feet, and we will catch you next time.